Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Brady Carlson, in for Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, restless genes, how humans develop the compulsion to see what lies beyond, and how that's helped to define human identity and success. And several years after the Haiti earthquake, we talk about the legacy of natural disaster and a nation in recovery. But we begin by weighing our medical and cultural obsession with obesity. Just in the past week, news aggregator Science Daily has published 10 weight-related articles, everything from why obese people have higher rates of asthma and top four reasons why diets fail to parasitic worms may help treat diseases associated with obesity. These sorts of studies, published on a daily basis, show the prevalence of the obesity crisis in the United States. Or do they? According to UCLA sociologist Abigail Segui, our culture frames obesity as a medical crisis, and she says that negative obsession is not a healthy one. Dr. Segui's new book is called What's Wrong with Fat, and she joins us now to explain. Doctor, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much.
There are two terms really here that we often think of as the same, but not quite. Fatness is one and obesity being the other. What is the difference between these two?
So obesity, people might not realize it, but is already a particular way of understanding fatness as a medical pathology. As soon as we say the word obesity, we are using this frame or way of understanding fatness. So I use the term fatness as a more neutral, generic term for talking about larger bodies, bodies that have fat on them.
And how does that then change the conversation, the idea that since we are conflating these oftentimes, how does that change the conversation? Do we just assume then that anybody who has more fat on their body then is, at a medical risk?
Yes, absolutely. So there's what we don't realize is there's many different ways of understanding fatness. For most of history in the United States, Europe, and in fact in most places around the world, fat is considered beautiful. So that's a different way of understanding fat bodies. Another way that we can talk about fat is a basis for civil rights claims, right? Weight-based discrimination is a problem. We shouldn't discriminate against people because they're heavier. And in that way, we think about fatness not as a disease like cancer or AIDS, but like as a basis of identity like race, gender, sexual orientation. But we rarely talk about fat in that way because we're so caught up in this medical and public health crisis way of understanding fatness.
And how did that all come about? You said it didn't used to be that way even in this country, but what changed?
So first, it became unfashionable to be fat. I mean, if we go back not even that long ago to the turn of the 20th century, who was the epitome of beauty? Well, one of the people was Lillian Russell, a stage actress. And she weighed over 200 pounds. She would be considered obese by today's standard. But at the time, she was extolled for her superior beauty. One commentator said that she took good care of herself to remain robust and healthy creature. We see this turning, though, at the beginning of the 20th century, so that in the 20s or 30s, Duchess Windsor Wallace Simpson famously quipped that you could not be too rich or too thin. Later, only later, does fatness get become understood as a medical problem. This happens in the 1950s. And interestingly, it happens when female patients pressure their doctors for some solution. Doctor, please help me lose weight. I need to lose weight to look good, to be fashionable. And it's here at this time that doctors start using the term obesity, using this term to signal that this is a medical issue, and start offering cutting-edge technological solutions such as jaw wiring so that people can lose weight. Of course, they don't work. They don't work any better than the cutting-edge solutions we have right now. But it marked the medicalization of this issue. It wasn't until later in the 1990s, and especially at the beginning of the 21st century, that we start talking about obesity as not only a medical problem, but as a public health crisis. And after 9/11, you have Surgeon General Richard Carmona calling obesity the terror within. And we see a lot of public resources and attention shifting from other issues such as tobacco to obesity.
But I mean, at the same time, I mean, we are seeing these the evidence that appears to, you know, come along with a higher rate of obesity, the diabetes and the higher the incidence of heart disease and all that. So it's not so much that you're saying that there aren't risk factors, at least for some people, in having high levels of obesity or being overweight.
So I'm not going to deny that being heavier, so having a obesity the way we define it means you have a body mass index, which is just a measure of weight controlling for height. That's really all it is. You have a body mass index over 30. So I'm not denying that as your body mass index or BMI increases, you are at higher risk. There are associations with certain illnesses. And type 2 diabetes, which you mentioned, is the clearest case of this. Even from there's basically a linear relationship for the higher your BMI, the higher your risk of diabetes. But even there, which is the strongest case, what we know is that there is an association, meaning that those people who have higher BMI also, on average, are more likely to have type 2 diabetes. What we don't know is what is the causation, the causal mechanism. Does having a higher BMI cause you to get diabetes? Does diabetes cause you to gain weight? Is there some other factor, maybe nutrition or exercise or even stress?
But those wind up getting lost in the shuffle because of the cultural conversation that says, well, people are overweight because they choose to eat too much or because they choose to eat the wrong things. And I wanted to ask you about, there was an incident a few months back where a TV news anchor was criticized. There was a person who wrote in who said, you know, you're setting a bad example by being overweight and that your obesity was a choice. And she stood up. She defended herself against that.
Absolutely.
And said, I'm not setting a bad example, and won a lot of fans for that. Do you think we might be reaching a turning point where people are going to start thinking differently about that perception of body size, fatness, as it were, versus obesity?
I hope so. I think she made a very important point, which was that what was happening when the caller told her that she was a bad model, that she shouldn't be on, basically that she shouldn't have her job, she shouldn't be visible, that just being visible, just existing, she was a bad role model and she was harming young people. She called that for what it was. She labeled that as bullying. And in doing so, she recentered the discussion about on this topic of bullying and weight-based bullying, which is a real issue. And one of the risks of talking about the obesity epidemic and of pathologizing larger bodies, which is what we do when we have billboards that go up, for instance, in Georgia, when they had the Wake Up Georgia campaign and put up large billboards of fat kids looking forlornly into the camera, looking depressed, and basically saying that these bodies were a problem. What is the effect of that? Well, I mean, if you're a fat kid, you look at that and you just think, yeah, I'm terrible. I feel even worse about myself. If you're a kid who picks on those kids, you think, yeah, I'm doing them a favor. They're unhealthy. They need to lose weight. And that type of message is not healthy. It's not productive, and it leads to this type of bullying.
Well, Dr. Sagi, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Abigail Sagi is a sociologist at UCLA and author of the new book, What's Wrong with Fat? You can find out more about her book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, the genetics of wanderlust. We'll look at what our DNA can tell us about mankind's desire to explore. That's when Word of Mouth continues.